Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my guest is Dean Roberts. He is author of I'll Fix My Head Before I'm Dead. His book takes the reader by the hand and guides them through the nostalgic meandering of memory lane. With wistful overtones and a stream of consciousness uninterrupted by punctuation, you cannot help but fall into rhythm with Dean's thoughts as he reflects on a life lived to its fullest. Dean's book is about his journey from being expelled from school at age 16 to creating a multi-million dollar manufacturing business 25 years later. The book chronicles his attempts to train himself in the art of living in a positive and grateful way. Dean's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. You can also visit Dean's blog at boneyardexpress.blogspot.com. And I also have a direct link to his blog also in the show page description. So with that, I'd like to welcome Dean to the show. Good day, Dean. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
It is my pleasure. I enjoyed reading your book. Format that you use without the punctuation, and I mean there is certainly a rhythm to it, and I found myself kind of rocking to the rhythm. So it really kind of takes people out of the box, you know, and kind of immediately puts people into a different frame of mind.
That's very nice to hear. I almost did it by necessity because I have my education in terms of English and spelling was not much at all. And when I wrote my daily journals, I kind of fell into that format many years ago. And I just figured I'd use it.
Yeah, that's great. Well, let's go ahead and start talking about, first of all, you know, as I mentioned into the introduction, that, you know, as far as a childhood, you indicated you were expelled from school at age 16, and you just talked about, you know, that kind of education. So would you mind sharing with the listeners just a little bit about that, you know, kind of, because there are people out there that maybe have had similar types of circumstances, and some people may find that to be, you know, to be preventing them from being successful, which you didn't. So would you mind kind of talking a little bit about, you know, that particular background, your childhood?
I grew up in Woodhaven, Queens, and earlier in Brooklyn, New York. And I kind of got in with a pretty wild crowd when I was pretty young. And the people we surround ourselves with are a tremendous influence in our life and our interests in everything that we do. And they weren't any more interested in going to school than I was. We were, by the time I was 12 or 13, I was drinking and smoking on a pretty regular basis. And we would, for recreation, even in our early teens, we would ride on top of the elevated trains where there was this whole network of elevated trains throughout Brooklyn, and we'd climb up on the station roof, and then we'd get on the top of the trains and ride around and drink wine. It was, I look back, I feel, Robert, so blessed, so fortunate that I was able to, at some point, catch on to the possibilities of life.
Yeah, you know, because, well, you know, that kind of rough crowd type of, you know, I mean, that when you think about that translates, you know, into adulthood, you know, and that you recognize that the people that you surround yourself with are critical to helping you achieve what it is that you want, or holding you back from achieving what it is that you want.
Absolutely. The friends that we have and our family support or lack of are instrumental in how people's lives come out. I was lucky that I came up to a crisis point at a fairly early age. I was about 25, and I had been married for 4 or 5 years. We had two kids, and I was just barely making a living. I was 70, 80 pounds heavier than I am now, and I smoked and I drank a lot. And I had asthma, and I was just very unhealthy and very unfit. And one night I woke up in the middle of the night. I was sleeping in a chair because I had this really bad cold. I couldn't even lay down because I was choking. And I took a couple of hits on the Metahaler that I had to relieve the asthmatic symptoms. And then I lit up a cigarette, and I sat there, and somehow the absurdity, the absolute insanity of the way I was treating myself came to light. And the next day I threw the cigarettes away, I stopped drinking, and I started to read, which was the seeds that grew into a whole different life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, those epiphany moments, you know, really, I mean, it's wonderful to be able to have those that, you know, that not only do you recognize that moment or in that particular case, the absurdity, but you also make changes, that you actually, you know, make use of that insight, you know, that awareness, you know, and quite often, you know, a lot of times people just might have that aha and then kind of continue back into the same cycle but not make changes. So it sounds like you made use of that. And now with reading seems to have had a big impact for you just in personal growth. So would you mind kind of sharing with the listeners kind of, I know, you know, that there was quite a bit that kind of that you used in helping you on your path of personal development.
I've read hundreds of self-help and personal development books, but there's a couple that really stand out. The first one that came into my life, a friend of mine gave me a copy of Think and Grow Rich, and that was just around the same, just about the same time that I had this moment of insight, and that's by Napoleon Hill. And I was, at that point, we were just barely paying the bills, and I read it and reread it and tried to implement some of the things that he said. And after 5 or 6 years, I started to straighten out my finances a little bit. But even more important than the finances, though, it led me into other books. And the second book that I have read every morning ever since then, pretty much, is Marcus Aurelius' Meditations. I just spend half a page or a quarter of a page or maybe just one paragraph every day. And his work was instrumental in me coming to the awareness that I didn't have to be tense and depressed and angry all the time. That not that I could just throw a switch and change all of that, but I could learn how to or train myself how to have better
Oh, did I lose you there? Hello? Dean, do I have you there?
Can you hear me okay?
Okay, now I do. Yep. You kind of, I lost you when you said that you train yourself, and then you kind of, I lost you there for a second.
Well, that's what I've spent the last 50 or 60 years doing, is retraining myself, and that's what the meaning of the book is, and the project of fixing my head, because I still have a lot of things that I'd like to change and to bring more under control, but I've come a long ways also, with the help of a lot of very intelligent authors and guides. I've gone to 4 different shrinks over the course of my life, and they've been very helpful in figuring out what's wrong, what I can do.
Yeah, well, you know, it's nice to get an objective opinion to be able to.
That's right.
In a different perspective, you know.
So, I know that. Absolutely, certainly. Certainly, it's a different educational perspective, anyway.
Yeah, very much so. Well, You know, one of the things that I mentioned, you know, too, is that you know, grew manufacturing business. So I would love for you to tell the listeners kind of, you know, how, when you got involved with the business. And now I know, I mean, we have a bunch of people who are, you know, listeners who are entrepreneurs. So they, you know, I mean, I think your insight and experience, you know, in that area might be helpful for them. So would you mind talking a little bit about, you know, when you entered the business, what kind of business it was, and how it was that you grew the business?
Yes, sir. When I got out of the Navy in 1957, I took several different jobs, and I finally settled working for my mother and father, and they had a steel rule dye business. They made dyes for other manufacturers in Brooklyn. And when I joined them, they were doing about $20,000 in sales totally for the year. And we just all barely scratched by. But as the time passed, I got to be a fairly decent dye maker. And then I started to go out and sell dyes to other manufacturers and get some new customers. And by 1970, my folks retired, and I had built a business up to maybe $150,000 in sales. And we had begun to do die cutting, which is you just take a steel rule die and you put it in the die cutting press and stamp all kinds of things out. We had one customer that we made die cut plywood lamp components for. And my father designed a birdhouse, and then we started to make birdhouses. We made two or three different styles, and we started making bird feeders. And a friend of mine had, who was an architect, designed a dollhouse kit, and he sent me the drawings for it. And I really wasn't impressed with it at all. I kind of forgot about it. But one of the fellows working for me made a model, and then all of a sudden, oh wow, dollhouses! So I signed up for a trade show in Dallas. And I took my dollhouse down there, and it was like the hit of the show. We sold 100 kits or 150 kits, but we had a lot of very positive feedback about it. And we sold some birdhouses and bird feeders, too. And that was really the launch, because from that point, I could see the potential, and I applied to our local bank for an SBA loan. And I bought some more equipment, and we built another building. And after about 4 years after that point, we were doing $3.5 million in sales, and I was doing trade shows all over the world.
Wow, wow.
And that was,
you know, see,
and that was all just done. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying, you know, and it was, it's kind of like, you know, in each step of the way from basically growing the diabetic, you know, business, from the parents to the birdhouses to the dollhouses. I mean, each one of those was like a new business. I mean, it was kind of adjusting your business and kind of keeping your eye open. You know, like you said, you weren't impressed with that, you know, the architect's, you know, the dollhouse, but someone else was and then actually did it. So, I mean, to me, you know, it's, I think a lot of business people ignore opportunities when they're presented, you know, and that's, I think, a mistake.
It's completely true, because there's opportunities beyond anybody's ability to actualize them. But, you know, there's another ingredient too that is like dumb luck. That had, if Kelly didn't send me that sample in a dollhouse, I don't know how, you know, I mean, it was transformative. I don't know, I probably would have come up with some kind of, I was really had a hunger to fix the money thing. I couldn't stand being broke. It was just, I didn't like it. It wasn't that I wanted to buy big houses and big cars or anything. I'd never done any of that. I made a lot of money. But I just wanted that independence and that freedom. You drop $100, you drop $1,000, it didn't make any difference. And also to be able to support charities and organizations that I cared about, which I did a lot of.
That's the key. I mean, you know, a lot of people, I think that, you know, getting that money, energy kind of in under control, you know, and not, like you say, not necessarily wealth beyond what you need, but basically enough to be able to provide you freedom to be able to do, you know, what it is that you want.
Well put. That's exactly what I wanted. And I got there pretty quickly, and then I spent a whole lot of money that I made in other business and enterprises that really didn't work out. But then a couple of them did. I came up with a patent for a puzzle postcard, and we sold them to the post office, and it turned into be a money pop. We made several million on that one year. And then we started making outdoor lawn ornaments for seasonal ornaments like Santa Claus and snowmen. So business is dynamic. It's not static. You can't just sit back and say, oh, well, this is what we do, and that's what we're going to do. You really need to utilize the asset that you've created to explore other markets and come up with other ideas.
Yeah. So how do you – I mean, you know, you mentioned – successes and failures, that is very common. But how did you handle the failures? What, you know, like when if you were to do something and it didn't turn out quite as expected, you know, maybe it wasn't that golden goose, you know, or the goose that laid the golden egg. How is it that you basically use that experience to continue on and not let it bring you down?
Well, I was very fortunate that the dollhouse thing went like a skyrocket. There wasn't any failures in that at all. There was a few misturns,
right,
but we fixed them as we
mm-hmm.
went. But later on, I had the money, so I could just laugh at some of the stupid things that I got into and be able to say, okay, here's the lesson, here's what I learned, because there's no failure. Some of the
right.
greatest lessons in the world cost you a lot of money, but if you can implement them as you go forward, then it's just another learning experience.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess if you have that, you know, financial cushion, you know, to be able to, you know, absorb it without it really kind of impacting you in a, you know, really negative way, then that makes, you know, kind of rebounding a little bit easier.
But yeah. That gets exactly to the point of the book and of my, of the project that I've made my life into, is that to build that personal strength, that integrity of confidence in yourself, that if it's raining or it's snowing or the car breaks down or if the dog dies or whatever happens, that I create this experience, I create my reaction to this experience, and to train myself to be able to weather these storms. With Robert DeRoe was one of my favorite authors. He wrote a book called The Master Game. He said, by skillful means, we can train ourselves to be comfortable even in hell. And that turned into be the purpose of that, my project of fixing my head, and still is, because I'm not there yet.
I'm
not dead yet either.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you know, I had to laugh when I you know, saw the title of the book, Fix My Head Before I'm Dead. Can you kind of explain, I mean, you know, I don't think a lot of people like to think that their head is broken, you know, the requires fixing. So, I mean, some of them are, so, you know, but you know, hopefully. So, what is you know, what is it that you mean by that, and how have you been working to fix your head?
I would define it as a state of enlightenment like the Buddha reached. That's the highest aspiration of any human, I think, to be able to totally, completely be in the present, to be one with the experience. I'm a long ways from that. But the process is a daily, almost hourly attention to what's going on in your life, to be aware of what you're thinking, to be aware of what you're doing, and to set up a practice. I get up in the morning, and I have for the last 40 years, a cup of coffee, and then I start to read three or four different books that I've read over and over again. And then I read some new books that I've been working on, just a page or two in each book. And then I write something, and then I go to my office, and I meditate, and I exercise. And it's a very busy day that I don't do all four of those things before I do anything else. And over the years, the accumulated effect of rewiring my head to this is the world I live in. It's a wonderful, exciting, interesting world. I don't have to be running around with pains in my chest and fearful about the future. I can deal with the future because I've developed those skills.
Yeah, yeah, very much. It sounds like, you know, being present, you know, is kind of
that's
the key.
That's it. Absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, that morning practice that you have, you know, mine is a little nature walk every morning, you know, and to me that's the button that kind of resets or starts my day. You know, I do a reset and then it gets me, you know, really kind of prepared, balanced, you know, and present. I mean, because I'm walking, I have to make sure I know, keep my eye on the, you know, the path ahead of me. But, you know, a lot of people, when I've talked to people about that, a lot of them will say, well, you know, I just don't have the time for that, or that, to me, that's like a waste of time. I mean, when there's so many other things that I could be doing. So what would, you know, you say to people who may have that excuse that they try and present to prevent them from doing that?
Life's an inside job. People have different opinions or standards. One of the things that I really want to try not to do with the rest of my life, I spent most of my time telling people all of my great wisdom and how terrific everything is and how great I can do things. And I don't want to do that. I think that people got to make up their own plan. And if they're happy, if they really like their life the way it is and there's nothing in it they'd like to change, then they got something that works. And if they're running around on a whole lot of negative emotions and they're unhealthy and they're overweight and they don't get enough sleep and they don't drink enough water and they're eating crappy foods, then they might consider study because they need to figure out how the laws of cause and effect really work.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what my morning practice has been for me. It's been a study program.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, I think that whole, and first of all, I'm glad that that you talk to people and let, kind of allow them to recognize what is working for them, you know, that, you know, go for it if it works for you, but if it's not working for you, then it's time to make a change and to do something differently to get a different result.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're just about halfway through the show, Dean, so I want to take just a quick break. Then when we return, I want to talk a little bit more about your book. You know, in that, a great part of your book is regarding journal entries. So I want to talk about those journal entries and, you know, how they have been a benefit to you, okay?
Thank you.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break.
Hi, I'm Roy Worley, and I'd like to talk a little bit about Robert Sharpe's thought-provoking and insightful book, Joy Potential. I've personally witnessed a wellspring of people who have responded to share their personal experience as to how reading Joy Potential affected them and their life in a very positive way. It's been interesting also to see how different parts of the book really impact people at different levels of their consciousness. So if you've not read and then reread Joy Potential, get your copy today.
Hi, it's Maya at Mind Over Matter in Nyack, New York. I'd just like to take a moment to share with you how amazing I found Robert Sharpe's book, Joy Potential. It kind of found me at a time when I was feeling out of sorts and overwhelmed and I guess derailed by the pressures of my career and my large family and caregiving and ailing husband. I just really felt like my spark was dimming. It was a perfect time for me to pick up Joy Potential because as I just in the first few pages began to read, I found that my frame of mind wasn't so different from others dealing with challenges and the trials and tribulations of life. I guess my first feeling was that I wasn't alone. And with that, I began to open more to receive the message that Robert gave of light and love and positive thinking. That's what Joy Potential is all about. His thoughts are beautifully written, and everyone, whether you're going through your own personal challenges, should read it. His message was certainly well received from me, and I'm thankful for his insight and his caring and really helping me to get back on track. I think everyone should put Joy Potential on the top of their reading list. Love and light. Thank you.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my guest is Dean Roberts. He is author of I'll Fix My Head Before I'm Dead. And again, Dean's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. And also, you can visit Dean's blog at boneyardexpress.blogspot.com. And again, I do have a direct link for that as well in the show page description. And if you'd like to call in and ask Dean any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. Or for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have a question that you would like for me to pose to Dean, feel free to type it in. Okay, and so with that, we're back, Dean. Hello, Dean. Did we catch you there?
Yes, hi.
Okay, great. Okay, great. I'd like to talk about, you know, the journal aspect of your book. First of all, how long have you been journaling?
Since 1970, pretty consistently, almost every day.
Oh, wow. Wow. Okay. Now, with that, do you do it every day? Do you and do you do it a certain time of day? Is it, do you have a particular routine, I guess, for lack of a better word, for your journaling?
It always was first thing in the morning. I would incorporate it with meditation, exercise, and reading, and most of it follows my day-to-day experience. I'd kind of set out some purpose for the day, and then I would evaluate what happened the day before. Then I would also, if I came on something that I just read that was very interesting, I'd write about that a little bit. And if nothing else, I think there's two values. One, it's really fun for me now to go back, and I read out of two different journals at different times. One is 90. I'm reading a 90 and a 96 right now. And it's just entertaining and sometimes insightful to see who I was and what I was thinking in those days. But to take and formulate an idea and concise enough so that you can put it down on paper, I think really helps your thinking. It makes you think better, and it makes you organize your thoughts in a way that you want it to make enough sense so you can tell what it meant when you read it. And that's the two values I see of it. Reflection?
Yeah.
Well, three, actually. Reflection, history, kind of a life history for yourself, and consolidating your thoughts into words.
Yeah. Yeah, very good things that you can get out of the journaling process. Now, when, you know, you and obviously if you kind of start the day with it, kind of planning out the day, then also reflect on what was accomplished at the day, that kind of, did you include like the positive and the negative kind of things? I mean, what, you know, because what I'm trying to, I wonder, and you know, when people who are out there journaling is that, you know, like you talk about reflection going back. So, you know, was there times that you would be like angry or depressed or confused, you know, any of those challenging kinds of emotions?
a lot of that earlier on, and as time passed, that became less common. But it was, yes, I had so many, year after year, I'd come up with all these high resolutions and plans in the morning, and then I'd put a bag over my head and run in circles all day. It was, and it was almost boring at a certain point. I could read the same resolutions and the same, this is a day of revolution. You know, and then fall into the same bad habits again. It took a while, but I finally was able to stand at least somewhat on my morning resolves.
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's great because I think so many times, especially in today's environment, you know, we get distracted. So I mean, there's so many things that are happening that can really pull us off course. You know, I mean, it can be really easy to get sidetracked nowadays.
100 great email newsletters a day. I mean, it's just so much interesting things available, all the podcasts that you can listen to. It's information overload.
Yeah, it can be. So now, when you went through to pull this book together, how did you go about selecting the journal entries to include?
I just feet of the pants. The ones that I found amusing or interesting or maybe insightful that are the ones that I turned to.
Okay. Well, great. That works. Well, you know, that's the kind of, 'cause see, one of the things that often a lot of listeners that I have had, you know, kind of talk about wanting to write a book, you know, one of the things I tell them is, you know, basically, you know, write about yourself. You know, that's the thing that you know best, and a journal is a great way to get to know yourself. And you know, so for those who are out there that may be considering that, I just wanted to, you know, have you be an example of how they can do that. And now, when you put this book together, what is it that you like continue to hope that the reader is going to take away from reading the book?
To see the great, incredible, fulfilling possibilities of life and the possibilities of transformation and enlightenment. I don't think it's a place many people get, but I think just in having that as a purpose in life makes you continually change and learn.
Yeah. Do you feel that, you know, over these years that your purpose has changed, or is there a common thread, you know, for your life purpose that you've seen throughout your experiences?
No, it's been very clearly going in the same direction for me. But the other part of that is that I would like to, now that I've learned a few things about how to live and how to really experience the joy and the possibilities of life, to help others to do the same thing. And that's what the purpose of the book was. I would hope that somebody somewhere would pick it up and say, you know, I just don't have to do this stuff anymore. I can change. I can learn skills that will enable me to, or empower me to, live the life that I dream about. And it's like that. We need skills and we need motivation and we need information. And the information is infinitely available. The skills of doing business or of making thorough dives or learning how to be a jeweler are available. But it takes effort. It takes motivation. You have to have some sort of vision in mind of how you want to live or how you want your life to be.
Yeah, that's very important. You kind of have to have an idea of where you want to go before you take those steps toward that.
Right.
You know, when you've created a business in Oneonta, is that correct?
Yes, sir. We have 8 years ago. We bought the Greeners Health Foods store. My wife and I.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit. By the way, I'm from Binghamton, so when I started reading Oneana, I was like, oh, I know that area real well.
Where do you live now?
Well, now I live in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, so I haven't gone back to Binghamton in a long, long, long time. But I went to school in Oswego and froze myself to death there and finished school in California. I got wise. But
enough cold weather for one lifetime, huh?
That is for sure. But tell us about that particular business. How did that come about? And tell us about it. That's very different from the dye business.
Oh, totally different. We were both very conscious about the way we ate. And my wife, we live on 40 acres, and my wife does. At that point when we bought the store, we were both just basically staying on the farm most of the time. We had goats and chickens, and we were growing all kinds of different foods and freezing them and canning them. So it was a different thing, but I played poker with the guy that owned the Green Earth. We had a room in the back where we had a Tuesday night poker game every week, and we were got to be friends over the years. And I didn't win it, but he had separated from his wife, and he had decided that he just did not want to do it anymore. And he was just finally decided, after a lot of complaining and thinking about it, that he was just going to close it up and go do something else. And about a week before, he was going to close it January 1st, 08. And about a week before that, he gave me a price that really was almost stupid, you know. And I says, okay, we'll try it. Because I figured if we didn't like it, we could always just close it up the way he was going to do it and walk away. I didn't buy the building or anything. And we got in there, and it was just so much fun. And it immediately started to change, and we bought some equipment, and we started to advertise. And then about 4 months into it, I made a deal with him to buy the building as well. And he was doing $250,000, now we're doing about $1.25 million. And we put in a community room, and we have a whole variety of different activities, yoga and meditation and tai chi, that are not that we're doing it, but we have outside instructors that use the community room. And we have a cafe, and it's a great thing. I get all my food wholesale.
There you go. Well, you know, that's like the epitome of whole life. I mean, of living, and because for someone like you, whose attention is toward good nutrition, healthy living, positive living. All of those components can be just wrapped up nicely in that particular business.
Yes, and that's what has held my interest. I really like it a lot. The only thing I'm not doing that I want to do is to influence people. I don't know how exactly to go along with that. Counseling or seminars, or I've had a couple of different lectures that I gave at the Green Earth, and they were well attended. But that's you're talking to the same people. I'm having coffee with them and then telling them the same stuff.
Well, So what would you say is your when you do these talks, what are the kinds of messages that you want to, deliver to these people?
Make the best of it. This we have a
Make
one time, or maybe it's not a maybe it's not a one time, but we have this possibility ahead of us this morning, and do what you can. Make every instant as full and as giving as you can make it. You know, if it's no more than just sending goodwill to a friend or an ex-wife or anybody, just.
Yeah. Now, I believe as far as your age, you're in your 70s. Is that correct?
I'll be 76 tomorrow.
76. Oh, well, happy birthday early.
Thank you.
That's great. Well, so many people would be thinking, at 76, I'm ready to retire, and kind of live the good life. But it sounds like that's the farthest thing from your mind is sitting back and it seems like you enjoy life, but it seems like you want to go out there and make changes and just help people, no matter what. To have that energy at 76, I mean, that's just wonderful. that's something to be admired.
I think genetics has got something to do with it, but it's not an accident. I look around at what Americans eat and the exercise is absolutely, totally critical. We can't live without a serious amount of exercise every day. And a strenuous exercise. That there's a really great podcast Dr. Plum. No, not Dr. Plum. I'm sorry. I don't want to plug somebody else's program either. But that people
That's
need
fine.
To really
That's
think fine. And study and learn about exercise and how absolutely critical it is. I do yoga every week. Every single day I do calisthenics. And some kind of a cardiovascular challenge, which is only a few minutes on an extra cycle, alternating with the every other day. And all day, every day, I'm doing isometrics and stretching. And I can do just basically anything I could do 40 years ago. I can bike 50 miles or I can walk 20 miles or whatever's next. And I should say, I got good genes, but I also have tried to make the best of them.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I just yesterday booked a couple ladies who have a website and a new book out called basically Reinventing Oneself, but they're in their 80s. I mean, they have a website called Elder Chicks, and it's like...
Oh, I got to get that.
Yeah, they're just... Yeah, elderchicks.com. Yeah, so I think they're going to be on middle of December. But yeah, it's to me, it's the idea of being 80 years old and still being interested in reinventing oneself. Being able because most people would have thought, my life has been defined. I have lived it already. But it's that little spark, that little, motivation to kind of, live life to its fullest. To me, that's, that's really the secret to really having a fulfilled life, really.
Absolutely. Give back. That's the way I look at it. I've been so incredibly blessed because I don't care how hard you work. I know people that have worked hard and studied and still their lives came out pretty crappy because maybe they didn't study the right things or whatever, but there's a certain amount of universal good fortune that comes to some people and doesn't come to other people. But the harder you try, it seems the luckier you get. You put yourself in the way of good things if you do a lot of things.
Yeah. Well, that's, to me, that's... that's where a lot of people kind of fall down in the sense of not taking those actions, and not stepping up. And, a lot of people kind of fear failure or fear the unknown or, there's so many excuses people can use for not, choosing to live life. It's just... Yeah, and so, wow. So now, what's next for you? You're really kind of looking at toward maybe expanding your speaking engagements to be able to influence people?
What occurred to me just in the last minute or two with these elder chicks in their 80s,
mm-hmm.
that maybe my audience shouldn't be young people that are starting out. Maybe I could... create a program for elders that are, like you said, people are like turning off, they get retiring, they're going to play golf all day, every day, or, there's such tremendous needs that people could step up in the community and get on a board of directors and work at a daycare or teach kids or run seminars or do all kinds of things. They got all kinds of skills that are valuable. even if they haven't done anything really extraordinary, they have extraordinary skills that in some area of the world that they could share with the community. And that may be a ministry to the old geezers or something like that.
Well, you know, I mean, it doesn't happen often, but every now and then I'll just get this little, you know, energy rushes that kind of come through my body when I sense something is just that resonates really strongly. And as you were talking about that, I just kind of got that little bit of a rush that, you know, I think that would be so good for you, you know, because you are a living example of what people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s can do. And
90s.
And right, yeah, and 90s, yeah. Sorry, there you go. I didn't want to kind of leave them out. I haven't had much experience with those people, but I did have one woman, an 80-year-old whose book is about living long and, you know, basically extending one's life, you know, and hers was very much positive living is the key to being able to make that happen. But right now, I mean, that is such a, there are so many people out there that could use, you know, that kind of guidance and that motivational jumpstart, you know, to be able to,
you know,
put some spark back.
When you said the elder chicks, I had exactly the same kind of experience you said. I said, wow, that is a really powerful thought, you know, that it just sort of resonated with me that's the crowd I should be speaking to.
Yeah, great. Well, keep me informed. I would love to hear how that works for you because you know that's the kind of thing, again, you know, the market, I don't want to have to put it in, you know, business and market terms, but the fact is that there are huge numbers of people that are, you know, in that particular segment of the population, and they could just use so much, you know. You know, I mean, because nothing worse than retiring and then, you know, having life be boring, you know. I mean, to me, that's a killer right there.
Such a tremendous waste of an incredible resource. Life is such a gift, such a possibility, and to just be bored, I can't even imagine how anybody could be bored, especially with the internet, because you can, any obscure, unusual interest, you can find all kinds of information and discussion groups and things to play into whatever you're interested in.
Yeah, very much so. And you know, particularly, you know, with your attention to good nutrition and exercise, you know, those are things that often too, for the people who are, you know, 60 on up, you know, those are the things that often too that can sometimes be put on the back table. You know, sometimes they just don't take that extra time to, you know, to recognize the value and the impact that it has on their daily, the quality of life.
Absolutely, yeah. It's frightening when you look at the percentage of overweight people and obese people, and you can bet just about everybody that's so overweight is also not exercising or not doing anything of any strenuous exercise anyway. And it makes your whole life work better. Your brain works better.
Yeah. So for people out there who are, let's say, I want to kind of go back, I mean, because we've talked a lot about the healthy living aspect, and so
yeah.
I want people to recognize that. But also now, as far as the business side of things, you know, again, what would you say that maybe are some of the, I'm not going to say mistakes, but what are some of the experiences that people, what are some of the practices that people use or employ that maybe aren't very helpful, you know, toward contributing to a successful business?
I think one of the things that guided me the most, and right in 1965 when I first read Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, I'd say that's the first thing anybody aspires to have a little bit more money is get that book and read it and reread it. Read 4 or 5 pages every day and follow the instructions and reread it and reread it. Because motivation, I mean, you can make a good living picking up bottles these days. That if you, and there's better plans than that around, but get in motion. Start to get active in the marketplace in some measure or the other. But give more than you get. Get more than you give has been served me so well. When you get into a deal, don't look to get 55, 60% of the value of the deal. Look to get 45%. Make sure the other person is so happy with that deal. You give that 5% goodwill capital, and it'll come back to you 100 times over. People, they promote your case. They say, hey, deal with Roberts. He's really, really looking out for my interests. That more than anything else I always looked at a customer complaint. I wanted to handle it more. Anybody had a problem, I want to talk to them. Because I said, maybe I'm not going to make you happy with the product, but you're going to go away happy with the company.
Yeah.
And I always did. And that little bit that, you know, we were selling stuff all over the world, but that little conversation that they had at the miniatures, they got together at the miniatures group, and it's, geez, I had trouble with that Green Lake Dolls, but boy, here's what the guy did. Cherish your customers. Treat them with all kindness and consideration that you can, and that in itself will set you on a path of financial independence.
Yeah. So, I mean, especially in today's environment when you have voicemail, email, texting, and all that kind of thing, where that person-to-person interaction is kind of diminished. For you, the value of that interaction, that personal interaction, really goes well beyond, you know, just the immediate business. It's kind of like a foundation for future business as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, answer the phone. It's so incredible how you call everybody and they've got voicemail, push 4 for this and 3 for that. There's one glowing, incredible example of good business and customer service. It's called Uline. They distribute office supplies and shipping room supplies and a whole catalog of all kinds of supplies like that all over the country. They have 4 or 5 warehouses. The phone rings once. Somebody answers the phone. Hi, is this Dean from Green Earth? And they know what you ordered and what you usually order, and you take the order, get it off the phone, and deliver it the next day. It's the most efficient, well-run, inspiring company that I've ever had to deal with. And I go to the phone company, you go through 15, you know, some guy came in from Verizon, he's trying to get our business back. And I said to him, he says, what can I do to get your business? I said, answer the phone when somebody calls you instead of having all these automated calendars that you got to go through. Talk to people. If you've got a business, answer the phone. Throw away the voicemail. Throw away the automated answer.
Yeah, great. And then also the other one that, you know, you talked about that little extra 5%. So it's just real important to be able to keep in mind, you know, not to necessarily giving a little bit more when it comes to a profit or cost, giving that little extra back to the customer, that too is what is going to build that relationship for future.
Absolutely. Do what you can.
Yeah.
When I see regular customers in the store and I'll comp them for lunch or buy them a cup of coffee or the little things like that, they go a long ways. I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I put a sign, as soon as we got the store, I put a sign in the window, our bathrooms are open to the public. And Robert, I got more goodwill capital out of that sign. I must have had 50 people tell me over the years, boy, that is so great. That's so community-minded. What a welcome. Because you go in the restaurants, the first thing you see is you walk in the door, our bathrooms are for our customers only.
Right.
What kind of welcome is that?
Yeah, you know, and see, that kind of thing is just so simple. I mean, you know, and it really doesn't, I mean, it really says a whole lot for the customer, even though they may not use a service or, you know, purchase anything or use a service at that moment.
Yeah.
They're going to remember that you are very welcoming and that, you know, they're going to want to go back.
Welcome. Welcoming, that's the word, right, welcoming, yeah. That, and, you know, for eight years now, we've never had one person, you get a homeless person, they say he's going to go in and mess up your bathroom or something. Never happened once. We've never had somebody, you know, go in there and take a shower and mess it all up.
Right.
Never happened. So it's a ridiculous way to greet a customer or a potential customer, in my mind.
It is.
The worst one is we have no public bathrooms. This liquor store that I used to deal with for a long time, all of a sudden I go in and he's got this sign in the window that we have no public bathrooms. That was the last time I ever bought anything for him.
Wow.
Not that I have to go to the bathroom a lot when I'm out traveling, but it's such a bad attitude, you know?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I know I'm the same way. I really don't like supporting businesses that have an attitude, you know, like that. It's like, there are people out there that, you know, can use my business, and I'm happy to direct it their way. But, well, we're down to the last few minutes here, Dean. So I just want to say thank you. This has really been, I really enjoyed our chat a lot. And I want to thank you for your time. And I think that you've done a lot of fixing to your head already. So I don't think there's a whole lot of fixing to be done left.
Still working on it.
There you go. Great. Well, listen, and keep in touch. I really hope that you, start addressing those seniors, you know, as far as, with your message. I think that would be, because you talked about impacting people. And, even though they've had some years behind them, they still have quite an ability to impact, you know, others as well. So, but thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
All anybody's got is today. So try to make the best of it when you get up.
Yeah, very much. Well, again, thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed our chat and your book as well. Okay, thank you. Okay, great. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Dean Roberts, author of I'll Fix My Head Before I'm Dead. And you can find Dean's book available at Amazon.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. And also, you can follow Dean's blog at boneyardexpress.blogspot.com. And again, I do have a direct link to that as well in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.